Minnesota House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform will come to order. Good morning, everyone. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel, excused. Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn. Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Happy multitasking Friday morning.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Novotny. Representative Novotny.
I'm just guessing. I don't have audio, but I am present. I will re-log on.
We hear you, Representative Novotny.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
Representative Pinto. Representative Pinto. Representative Poston. Excused. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Zhang.
Here.
Representative Pinto. That concludes roll call with 16 present.
Thank you, Ms. Agufo-Falami. There is a quorum present, I need to advise the public that this hearing is being conducted remotely on an electronic platform pursuant to Minnesota House Rule 10.01, which could be observed or read by all on the Minnesota House website. You can also visit our committee page on that website for instructions on how to access this hearing via streaming video, as well as instructions for participating in public testimony. Our first order of business today, as usual, is to adopt our minutes. We do have the minutes from yesterday, March 4th, and so if any member would be willing to offer a motion, the chair would appreciate it.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Representative Edelson moves adoption of the minutes of March 4th for this committee discussion. Representative Johnson, we're okay with a voice vote?
That is fine.
Very well. Thank you. So all in favor of adopting the minutes of March 4th, please say aye.
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 Poll, same sign. Motion prevails. And the minutes of March 4th are hereby adopted. Members, we have four bills before us. I hope to keep us moving through them, but I'm also looking for a good discussion on these bills. The first two bills are offered by Representative Becker Finn, who is also chair of our House Judiciary Committee. So welcome to the committee. Chair Becker Finn, the chair, moves to refer House File 1403 to the General Register. So, Representative Becker-Finn, your bill is now before us. There's also an author's amendment, and so I defer to you if you wish for us to move the author's amendment at this point.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could move that amendment, it's just a small change to just clarify the true intent of the bill.
Very well. Representative Johnson, are we okay with a voice vote on this motion?
Yes, we are.
Thank you, sir. The chair moves to amend House File 1403 with the A1 amendment. Discussion. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 All same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 1403 is before us as amended with the A1 amendment. Representative Beckerfin, welcome to the committee.
Yep, thank you very much, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. House File 1403, or what we're calling the Healthy Start Act because of its focus, is an agency bill that I'm very proud to carry in partnership with the Department of Corrections. Before I get into the details of the bill itself, I do want to highlight that the Healthy Start Act is a bipartisan piece of legislation in both the House and the Senate, and I believe for the first time in our legislature's history, I haven't gotten word back from the Legislative Reference Library, but we have a bill with all women authors in the House with the maximum number of co-authors. And I thank Representative O'Neill for being my number two on this bill. I know it's an issue that she cares a lot about as well. Members, this bill has been born out of the tireless advocacy of a wide range of stakeholders, including healthcare providers, religious groups, victim rights organization, and of course, mothers who have experienced incarceration themselves. Yesterday, the Department of Corrections shared with all of you and with your CA packet of support letters from organizations and coalitions, and I encourage you to review all those letters, you know, if not during the testimony today, but at a later time, because they are powerful. So first of all, members, I know many of you are parents, and so I want to paint a picture, a story that the kinds of stories that were shared with me when I was able to visit some of the inmates at Shakopee in 2019. Imagine you're going to the hospital to give birth to the baby you have carried and nourished in your body for 9 months. You're nervous, you're in pain, you're worried about how the birth will go and whether your baby will be healthy. You go through labor, it's grueling. You don't have family with you, but instead there are corrections officers in the room, and it's the hardest thing that you've ever done. Your baby is finally born, and the nurses put the newborn baby on your chest, and it's the most beautiful moment of your life. And then 36 hours later, the doctor signs off that you no longer need to be at the hospital, and you are forced to hand that baby, that beautiful baby who was physically a part of you for 9 months, over to someone else. And you walk out of that building, your body a constant reminder of the culmination of your pregnancy, of the labor, of the birth, and you don't have that baby in your arms, and you don't know when you will hold that baby in your arms again. This is the current accepted practice for moms who give birth while incarcerated in Minnesota. When I learned this in 2019, to be honest, it broke me. It's not okay, and this bill is our response to that. The Healthy Start Act is a simple solution to this very profound problem. It allows the Commissioner of Corrections to place women who are pregnant or immediately postpartum into community alternatives, such as halfway houses, to supervise them in accordance with current statute and provide them treatment and programming in the placement location for the duration of their pregnancy and for up to 1 year post-birth, to allow for that baby to be near their mother for the first year of their lives. Currently, women carry out their pregnancy terms in prison, give birth in a hospital, and return to prison 2 to 3 days or sooner after giving birth. Often their children are being cared for by family members, but it is difficult to provide the right level of visitation at the hospital, and there are barriers to visitation, such as caregivers. The average distance that a caregiver is from Shakopee, from the prison, is about 2 hours away. Myriad data exists on the negative impact incarceration has on children, on mothers, their families, and the Department of Corrections is limited in the types of programming available within the correctional facilities. Research shows that higher levels of postpartum depression for women who are incarcerated when they give birth, the separation is stressful for both the child and the mother. And in the majority of cases, women who are giving birth while incarcerated in Minnesota, the mothers are reaching their release dates within 6 months of giving birth anyway. Members, I recently looked at the data and I was stunned, and I think I appreciate the chair giving me the time to make sure that this is on the record. A total of 278 pregnant women were sentenced to serve time in prison between 2013 and 2020. 34% of the pregnant women, one third, were Native. 12% were Black and 53% white. 77% were in prison for technical violations. 84% had nonviolent governing offenses, and 77% were sentenced to prison while pregnant for less than 9 months. The median length of stay for a pregnant woman in Minnesota prison is only 4.5 months. So 41% of mothers who gave birth while incarcerated reached their release date within 90 days of giving birth. So essentially, during the most critical point in a baby's life, we separated that baby from their mom. One study looking at visitation showed that, as I mentioned, the average length of distance from a caregiver to Shakopee is 2 hours, and 56% of caregivers reported never being able to take the baby there for visits to the prison. In a few moments, you'll hear some heartbreaking stories behind those numbers from the women who have experienced them firsthand. They were, for many reasons, not able to testify, but we do have their stories and we'll share them with you. Finally, as the folks at the Children's Defense Fund state, we must consider who is paying the price for these policies. Our current short-sighted way of handling these pregnancies punishes babies with potentially devastating long-term consequences. Mothers and children both experience the trauma of separation, unable to create the strong bonds that sustain and nourish a child's future development. Before I hand this off, I just want to share a line from one of the letters. The Healthy Start Act is an opportunity to revise ineffective public policies to positively impact two generations at one time. Members, this is an incredible opportunity to disrupt cycles of trauma. I hope that you will vote yes on this common sense bipartisan bill today. And with that, I will hand it off to my testifiers. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Fenn, and thank you for bringing us such an important bill. I do have two testifiers listed. First, we have Government Relations Director at the Department of Corrections, Safia Khan, and then we have another testifier, Professor Schlafer. So let's hear from Director Khan first. Welcome to the committee, Director Khan.
Good morning, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. Thank you for welcoming me. My name is Safia Khan, and I am the Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. I'm really happy to be here with you today. I'm actually going to share my screen because I have a few slides, and also because I would like you to not be looking at my bedroom in the background. So are you able to see the screen?
Not yet. Oh, here, looks like something's happening. There we go.
Wonderful. So, Chair and members, on behalf of the DOC, I want to first thank Representative Becker-Fenn, Representative O'Neill, and all the other legislators in the House and the Senate who have signed on to this legislation for their support. I also want to thank the various community partners who have provided their expertise, support, and advocacy for pushing for this legislation. And I know if we were in person, they would be joining us, and I know many are watching us right now. As you have already heard, this legislation is simple but has profound impact on people's lives. Since you have heard about the data supporting and the explanation of this bill, and I also have the data up on the screen for you, I'm actually going to use my time today to bring you the stories of three resilient Minnesotan children and their mothers who were incarcerated while they gave birth to them. I'm sharing these stories per their request to have their voices be heard as part of you considering this legislation. Between time constraints and logistical barriers for two of the individuals, we worked this week to synthesize their stories and offer them together as part of this testimony. Our original idea was to present to you a video recording, but I'm just gonna have to do today. So they do all plan on watching this hearing live or recorded and speaking with any of you who would like to discuss their experiences with them directly and in more detail. And I would be happy to offer that connection. So without further ado, I'm actually going to share the first story. The first story I'm going to share is that of Autumn and her daughter, Reality. Autumn spent her last trimester in immense discomfort in prison. She went into labor at midnight, accompanied only by corrections officers who were to remain in her room throughout her labor and in the immediate postpartum period. Being incarcerated while giving birth also meant that Autumn was not able to have any of her family with her, not even her 5-year-old and her 2.5-year-old children or her mother. She was grateful to have her doula there for support when she gave birth to her daughter, Reality. Autumn says that the hardest part of her experience was not the giving birth part, but separating from her newborn baby within 36 hours and returning to prison in that state. Autumn's mother stepped into her role and cared for her three minor children. Chair and members, after spending the first 36 hours of her life with her, the next time Autumn and baby Reality would see each other was actually 5 weeks later. A prison visit is not conducive for mother-child bonding, and the department policies prohibited kissing and touching between the mother and the child. The visits were only 2 hours long and twice a month. Every 4 to 6 weeks, Autumn and Reality would were able to spend 4.5 hours on a Saturday together as part of the parenting program. Being apart was deeply stressful and traumatic for both Autumn and Reality. Unlike her siblings, Reality suffered from colic, GERD, and other digestive issues. It was difficult for her to digest formula, and there was no way for her to have her mother's milk. Even with all those challenges, Autumn's mother, who lived in the metro area with the children, was consistent about visits so Reality could start to forge a bond with her mother. That abruptly stopped 10 months into Reality's life when Autumn was moved to 3 different jails in northern Minnesota due to the population at the Shakopee prison reaching its capacity. So out of the first 2 years of Reality's life, she did not physically see her mother for 10 months. Ultimately, a little less than 2 years after giving birth, Autumn was released to a halfway house close to home. The residential setting of a halfway house allowed for longer and more frequent and more appropriate visits between Autumn and Reality. At that time, Reality called her mother Titi, thinking she was an aunt. Autumn had to put forth extra effort to connect with her and bond with her. And even then, there were a lot of things about Reality's personality that Autumn knows would have been different had they been able to forge a connection during that crucial period after birth. Reality was reclusive and had severe separation anxiety. She would absolutely panic when away from Autumn at all. Today, Reality is a thriving 6.5-year-old who is currently distance learning from her home. But the mental and emotional disruption of growth remains. Reality is still socially withdrawn. She still has a hard time attaching or detaching from people. Her mother says she knows this is something they will have to work on for a very, very long time. When asked how this legislation would have helped her if it were law when Reality was born, Autumn says it would have totally changed her and Reality's bond. Being closer and having more access to each other would have allowed them to forge a tighter bond. She would have been able to breastfeed her child, to maintain a healthy relationship, and would have severely reduced the pure agony of those crucial first months apart. Next, I'm going to share the story of Elijah and his mother, Jennifer. Elijah's mother, Jennifer, was revoked to prison on a technical violation of her probation at the time she was 4 months pregnant. She shared that Elijah was born almost exactly a year ago via C-section. While corrections officers were not in the room during the birth, they were present during labor as well as right after, which Jennifer found deeply uncomfortable in the immediate aftermath of her surgery. Jennifer was grateful to have her doula in the room, but had no other family or friends to support her in those first 48 hours after C-section. Jennifer says that separating from Elijah within 48 hours was the hardest part of it all. Because she had no family who was able to take her newborn baby, Jennifer relied on a volunteer family through a local organization focused on helping parents in situations like hers. While she remains grateful that to have had this option, this also meant that 48 hours after giving birth to Elijah, Jennifer had to hand him over to a family she did not know and return to her prison cell. Returning to prison and being in prison after a C-section was incredibly difficult and incredibly uncomfortable for Jennifer. On top of the physical and emotional challenges of being immediately postpartum, 2 days after her separation from Elijah, the Shakopee facility shut down in-person visitation due to COVID-19. So the next time baby Elijah would see his mother again was 6.5 months later when she was released. For 6.5 months, in the middle of a global pandemic that created so much anxiety in all of us, Jennifer relied on a photo every 2 months to know how he was growing. Upon release, as Elijah and Jennifer reunited, he would not want to come near her and felt extremely distressed. But over the last several months, both Elijah and Jennifer have worked hard to form a bond with each other, even as Jennifer works hard to provide for their family by working as a union carpenter. Jennifer noticed that he missed milestones while she was incarcerated, but as they spend more time together, he's beginning to meet them. Elijah actually turns 1 year old this month, and Jennifer wishes so strongly that she had not missed those first 6.5 months of his life. And she worries about the lifelong impact of that separation. When asked how the Healthy Start Act would have impacted her family, Jennifer stated, "It would have totally changed both of our lives. If I could have received treatment and programming in a residential program with or near my child, it would have made both of our lives so much better." And chair and members, the last story I'm going to share with you today is that of Jean and Daphne. After spending a week in the hospital due to pregnancy complications, Jean's probation was revoked and she was sent to prison while 29 weeks pregnant. Jean was transported 3 hours away from her family to the Shakopee prison. The transition to prison with her complications and being suddenly moved away from her family and other children was incredibly stressful and painful for Jean. She shares that only 6 days after arriving at Shakopee, she went into labor 10 weeks early. The local hospital that she transferred to in Shakopee does not have a neonatal intensive care unit, so she was rushed over to a different hospital 45 minutes away by ambulance. Within a couple of hours of her arrival at the hospital, Jean gave birth to baby Daphne. Daphne arrived in this world weighing only 3.5 pounds and was whisked away to intensive care. Jean had no family or friends in the area, as her baby was in intensive care while the return to prison loomed over her head. Jean spent 38 hours, less than 2 days, in the hospital by her baby while healing from birth herself, and then she had to say goodbye to Daphne, leaving her alone in intensive care and returned to prison. Daphne spent almost 6 weeks in intensive care and then ended up in the foster care system. As Jean faced severe postpartum depression, there were periods of time when she did not know where her baby was ending up or how she was doing. Over the first 15 months of her life, Daphne ended up in two different foster homes. And shortly after Jean was released and returned home to be reunited with Daphne and her brother. Jean takes the second chance she's been given very seriously. She takes care of Daphne and gets her to regular doctor's appointments. Daphne is now two and is resilient and bright and happy and very independent. But Jean notices that they don't have the kind of bond that Jean shares with her sons. They continue to try, but it is really hard when that critical period where Jean feels Daphne needed her the most is gone. What devastates Jean a lot is that she doesn't know what life was like for her daughter in foster care. She feels like when they reunited, she didn't really know anything about her daughter and had to learn everything from scratch. The relationship is still coming together, and as Jean puts it, it's really, really hard, and it's really, really sad. When asked why she wanted to tell her story to support the Healthy Start Act and what she would like to say to all of you, Jean stated, "Every child deserves to know their mother. Daphne had nothing to do with why I went to prison. It was never her fault, but she's the one who suffered. This legislation would have made a world of difference for us." Chair and members, that concludes the experiences that Autumn, Jennifer, and Jean wanted to share with you in regards to the need for this legislation. If time had allowed, each one of their powerful and devastating stories could have taken the entire hearing. There are many intimate and devastating details that I didn't share, but as I mentioned earlier, all three have expressed a willingness to connect with any of you directly to share more details of what those experiences were. The stories you heard today depict the realities of how much devastation the separation causes both the mother and the child in that crucial early childhood period. As Representative Becker Finn shared, 56% of women who give birth while incarcerated reach their release dates within 6 months of giving birth, and 76% within a year. House File 1403 gives us a chance to offer a healthy start to children like Reality, Elijah, and Daphne, and we hope you will consider supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Kahn, for this powerful testimony, putting a human face on the importance of this legislation. I'm so struck by the immense collateral damage that we could avoid and not cause as a result of moving forward in the way that Chair Becker Finn is proposing that we do. Next, we have Professor Schlafer. If you can come forward and give us your testimony. State your name for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Schlafer, and I am an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Minnesota's Medical School. I'm a developmental child psychologist with additional training in maternal and child public health, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Over the last decade, I have had the privilege of serving as the research director for the Minnesota Prison Doula Project, which provides group-based education and one-on-one doula support to pregnant and postpartum women. In this role, I have assisted the program leadership in evaluating the program and documenting the strengths and needs of our clients, some of whom have bravely shared their stories with you today. We know that more than half of mothers who give birth in custody are released from prison within 6 months of giving birth. And as you heard, three quarters are released within 1 year. Following their release from prison, most return to a caregiving role. What this means is that we've unnecessarily separated moms and babies during a sensitive period in the baby's life course. A baby's job is to bond with its mother. But this separation means that babies have no opportunity for bonding or breast milk or being physically and emotionally together in the way that we know is best for infant development. And it's not an understatement to say that these early weeks, months, and years become the foundation for all future health and development. This is a critically important time for bonding and attachment, and it ultimately has implications for children's social, emotional, physical, and cognitive development. In those early weeks and months of life, babies need their mothers. Indeed, both are biologically primed and ready to be with one another. The reality is that there's no visitation program or policy that the DOC could create that would be developmentally appropriate for moms and newborns. They simply need to be together. I want to acknowledge that some other states have addressed this problem by using prison nursery programs, in which babies co-reside with their mothers in prison until about 1 year of age. I know that some stakeholders over the years have considered this as a potential solution for our state. But if the goal is to keep moms and babies together, we don't need to put babies behind bars. We simply need to take the key ingredients from these programs, safe and stable housing, social support, treatment for substance use disorders, mental health treatment, and parenting education and support, and make those things available to moms in the community so that they can finish their sentences with the supports that they need to also be a safe and healthy parent. As Representative Becker Finn said in the beginning, this is a simple solution to a profound problem. It's also one that's strongly supported by the existing research in this area. Thank you for your time today and attention to this really important issue. I'd be happy to take any questions now or later that members may have.
Thank you, Professor Slafer, for your testimony today. Representative Becker Finn, we can now open this up. Unless you have other testifiers, we can open this up for discussion.
That's everybody, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very well. Well, why don't we do that? Let's open this up for discussions, comments, questions from committee members. Representative Rowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much appreciate it. To the bill's author and probably one of your testifiers, what is the effect on the overall sentence for a woman who is who would fall underneath this program? So if a person has a, let's say, I'll just pick an easy number. If a person has a 5-year sentence and within that first year, they are put into this program that's going to be created with this bill, what would be the effect of the sentence on that individual, Mr. Chair?
Chair Becker Finn.
I'm actually going to let DOC answer that one.
I thought so. Director Kahn.
Chair members, Chair Representative Rowley, I'm actually going to have the commissioner answer this question. He has also joined us, and he's going to take questions for the department.
Fantastic. Welcome, Commissioner.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, Representative Rowley. The impact, you know, this is, I think, as you heard in the testimony, the majority of these women are really serving very short sentences, 76% of them giving birth within that year their release date. In this particular case, what we want to do is make sure we're maximizing that context. So what would happen is a person would be could be released out to one of those community alternatives, and they would be able to be in that community alternative. There would be a time when they would need to go back, but that really critical bonding period, and ultimately from a prison system standpoint, we want to make sure that we're providing all access following that point. So that first year, that person may be in a halfway house that is really targeted at providing the kinds of support, both from a postnatal standpoint and all of the kinds of services that they might receive while they're in. And remember that 5-year sentence actually is going to boil down to just a little bit more, a little less than 3, I believe, a little right around that 3 mark, 3 years. And so that first year could be in that halfway house setting or alternative setting where those services are provided. There is monitoring, all the kinds of criminal justice elements that they're serving their sentence in an alternative location. It's not really different than what we might see today with things like work release or some of our other programs where there is alternative placement in the community. And that's what this would look like.
Very well. Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Rowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'll summarize that, this isn't a way for somebody to get out of their sentence. This is actually being very pro-woman, pro-child, and pro-society. I absolutely love this bill. I think it's great. I think it puts the focus on where it should be, and that is the sanctity of life and making sure that we're taking care of women and children. And I'm a big supporter of making sure that at every opportunity that we have as a legislator, that we honor life and that we protect life. Thank you very much. I'm satisfied, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rowley. Very well stated. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Becker Finn, for bringing this legislation forward. I just want to say I've represented women who were separated by their children from their children in prison, and it is truly heartbreaking. And the amount of blame and guilt that they take on throughout that child's life is overwhelming in a lot of cases and can actually really negatively impact their future chances of success. The one thing that I want to point out is in our statutes, we have more stringent rules for separating dogs and cats from their puppies than we do for children. And that's not right. We deserve better, all of us as a society. And that's why I'm really in support of this provision. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. And we have the power to do better for one another. Representative O'Neill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a train coming. I live near the tracks, so if you hear something, I'm very sorry. Such is live. So I just wanted to explain why I decided to be the second author. We are really in historic time. So one is that we have the highest number of women ever in the House of Representatives. I think that's amazing. And I really like the idea. Not that I don't want men on it. Please don't think of it that way. But we have just a historic time in the Minnesota legislature. And we actually had enough women to put on the bill, and we filled it up with women, and we have more than that, actually, in the House of Representatives. But what's most critical about this bill is the fact that when you separate an infant from their mother, you don't get that time back. That bonding time is essential, and I couldn't have said it any better that the sanctity of life is so critical. You'll never get that time back. So if there's anything that can be done to, and as we already talked about, kind of mitigation of issues with their sentence, it's also telling that so many of them were there for technical violations, which I will get to in my bill, but you cannot get that time back, and you are damaging that child when you do that. So again, from my both bachelor's and master's degree and experience, you are forever causing harm to that child by separating them from their mother during that critical time. Also, it's super critical if that woman can nurse, that that helps brain development and it helps your, you know, your immunology, your immune system, excuse me. And we can see now that we're in the middle of a pandemic how critical that immune system really, really is. So I am incredibly supportive. I am absolutely glad that we have really historically done a women-only bill for women and making sure that they have that bonding time with their child. And I couldn't be prouder to be on this bill with Chair Becker Finn. So thank you.
Very well said, Representative O'Neill. You know, I'm one of the old gray guys now, I guess, in the legislature. When I first came in the 90s, I think maybe at best 20% of the legislature were women. It was still enough of a novelty that it was a big deal to have reached that percentage, in my opinion. Good legislators, you know, at that time, not disparaging that, but I think we're a better institution by virtue of our much more inclusive, gender-inclusive reality. Representative Pinto.
Mr. Chair, really quickly.
Oh, Representative Leo.
I just want to point out that those women that came in with you were literally plowing new ground for us to be here. And again, I couldn't be prouder that I think there's 49 of us now in the House out of 134. So we could do better, but yeah. I'm very, very proud to serve with these amazing women. We've got just incredible women. As I said yesterday about Representative Feist, and I really enjoy working with some of our new freshmen. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should note my apologies for being late with the roll call, et cetera. I have a second committee going as well. I'm one of those men who unfortunately was not able to co-author the bill, even though I desperately wanted to, in support of what's been described here. And I'm very glad that that's the case, although also bummed because this is such a phenomenal bill. And I guess as the chair of the House Early Childhood Committee, I just want to note we've talked a lot about the impact on successful early development of that bonding time with the mother, which is so critical. And I guess I just want to make sure that we all recognize then how critical that successful early development is. Every person hearing my voice, the most important year of your life, even though you don't remember it, was those first 12 months. And it really sets up so much later. And we think about children with incarcerated parents. These are our children who we especially need to make sure are getting off to a really good start in their lives. We had a terrific joint hearing last term between the Corrections Division and the House Early Childhood Committee, exploring a lot of these issues and really recognizing how critical this time is. And so I just want folks to realize that when we don't have that, that bonding doesn't occur and you don't have that, we in any way impinge on that early development, we are hurting all the rest of us for many, many years to come. And that would be a deeply, deeply, not only a deeply immoral thing to do, a deeply stupid thing to do. Let's not possibly do that. I'm so thrilled with this bill, and let's make sure that we move it on and can make this happen. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Well said, Representative Pinto. You know, I'm old enough to remember the Romanian child crisis in the 1980s, maybe latter 70s, where half a million very young children were separated. I don't know, remember all the conditions, but it was really the first time separated from their mothers and institutionalized, and I mean, nobody holding them, no bonding whatsoever. That society, decades later, is continuing to pay the price for that. Not the same as this, but it was the, in my mind, the early, one of the earliest reminders and awareness of just how humanely critical it is to be able to have that presence between mother and child right off the bat, and the immense social consequences that flow when we impede that, not allow that to happen. Representative Becker Finn, you get the final words, and then we'll move to a vote.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you to my testifiers as well as members for their comments. You know, one thing I just want to emphasize as well, you know, for myself as a Native woman and as a mom, you know, we all agree on how awful this is. And just to point out that it really is disproportionately this terrible, awful thing is impacting women from my community and children from my community. And we talk a lot about trauma as Native folks. And so to interrupt further trauma with a bill like this is just so incredibly important for the future of our community, but also, you know, all of us as Minnesotans, and I think just as human beings. And so I thank you, everybody, for your time and would appreciate your support on this very important bill. It is by far the most important bill that I have worked on in my time here at the legislature.
Well, thank you, Chair Becker Finn. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 1403, as amended, is referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel, excused. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston. Excused. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 17 ayes and zero nays.
Very well. With 17 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1403, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Congratulations, Representative Becker-Finn, but more importantly, thank you for this work. Very, very quickly, Chair Becker-Finn, what's the status of this legislation in the other body?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the question. Senator Kiffmeyer is the chief author in the Senate, and we are hoping to see it move in that body as well. Obviously, as with no fiscal note attached, certainly hoping that this is something we can get done regardless of how the rest of the session goes.
Fantastic. Best wishes to you and to Senator Kiffmeyer. And Chair Becker-Finn, you also have the next bill, House File 641. The chair moves to refer House File 1641 to the General Register. Chair Becker-Finn, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is taking things a little bit different direction. This is another Department of Corrections agency bill that I'm proud to author. The intent of this bill is to establish a working group to evaluate and make recommendations for whether for federally recognized Indian tribes to participate in community corrections subsidy programs so that supervision can happen at the tribal level. Joining me today is Commissioner Schnell, who's had some preliminary conversations about this issue and the need for a working group. I'm a person who's not always in favor of working groups, but I think this is an area where it makes sense to do that. I also have other DOC staff here, including Randy Goodwin, who's the Department of Corrections tribal liaison. So as mentioned previously, the rates of incarceration and recidivism are very high for Native folks. And, we bring this up all the time, and we really need to start working on how to address that. And so the working group created by this bill would focus on the mechanism tribes could use to provide supervision and support in a more culturally relevant way for people who live within the boundaries of their reservations. So figuring out how tribes can offer individuals returning to our communities, within our traditions, within our language, within our culture is hugely important. And I think that the recommendations that I'm hopeful would come out of this would address those unique circumstances. The bill furthers government-to-government relations and builds buy-in through the working group process as everybody would be at the table and prioritizing the development of the mechanisms needed to allow for tribal supervision. It's anticipated that the high incarceration and recidivism rates for Native people would actually decline if we were able to provide more culturally relevant and connected supervision where folks live in their home communities. And, we see when it comes to mental health resources and addiction supports and those kinds of things, that when those things are able to be provided in a more culturally appropriate way, they tend to work better and they resonate better with the folks they're serving. And so that this is a really good bill, and I'm happy to turn it over to Commissioner Schnell to talk more about the DOC view.
Very well. Welcome back, Commissioner Schnell. If you could state your name for the record.
Yes, Paul Schnell. Commissioner of the Department of Corrections, thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm going to make my comments really, really brief, and hopefully there are questions that come out of this. But this really grew out of tribal consultation that we've been engaged in with all of the tribal governments across Minnesota. And I want to put this in a very personal context, and thinking about this from the standpoint of my role. When I sit across the table with tribal government leaders, again, across our state, and have conversations about the incredible overrepresentation, almost 9%, close to 10% of our people at any given time in our prisons are Native American. And add to that the reality that probation revocation rates are are high, the highest of any group, regardless of offense. In fact, in most instances, revocation rates for Native Americans is double that of any other racial, ethnic, or cultural group in our state. And when you have these conversations with tribal government leaders, and the question becomes, how is that? And what's happening and what might make a difference? It's very difficult to say that the status quo is achieving the kinds of outcomes that this state, and I would think all of us as in leadership roles, and you all as policymakers, that we could say this is, it's good enough, or it's the best we can do. And so this bill really comes out of a desire, I think, across the board to say, you know, if we were to start to have tribal governments provide this training, very similar to, it's just a different, you know, right now we provide funding in some instances as the county level, as a county through pass-through, and it would be recognizing tribal governments as a government entity to provide those services for members of their community. And there's a lot to be worked out here. We have to figure out jurisdiction. We have to figure out what funding would look like. We have to figure out, you know, what the processes would look like, and referrals, and how we ascertain which tribe a person may belong to. But ultimately, that's what this work group would begin to do, is really look at, study that, and come back with some recommendations. And I think engage the tribal governments to solve a problem that we cannot continue to admire. We have to start to think about how is it that we become more effective in the delivery of services to Native American Minnesotans. And that's really what this looks like. There's a broad list of stakeholders that would be involved in these conversations. And we think it reflects minimally really a good policy approach to saying what would this look like and what potentially could we achieve. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions that you or the committee members may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. So let's do that. Let's open up for committee discussion and deliberation. Representative Valley.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. To the author, my first question is going to be in subdivision 3, and it relates to the members of the working group. Specifically, I've got one question that seems a little bit technical as far as how the question is going to be phrased. In reading through who the working group must include, most of them say, like I'll pick line 2.8, a commissioner of corrections or designee. And then where it says on line 2.11, a representative of each Minnesota-based federally recognized Indian tribe appointed by each tribe. And then it says a representative appointed by, and so forth. When we get down to line 2.18, it does not give the opportunity for a designee. It does state Department of Corrections Executive Officer of Hearings and Release, and the Department of Corrections Director of Field Services. And I'm just wondering if I could ask the author, would it be better to insert the language of or designee to those, or is there a specific reason that those two individuals were called out by specifically by that those two lines? And again, the lines are 2.18 and 2.19, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Chair Becker-Flynn.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for actually reading the bill. appreciate that.
Always a good thing.
as this is an agency bill, I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Schnell to answer that question.
I thought so. Commissioner Schnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh. I think there was some reasons because of the fact that those roles, the Executive Officer of Hearings and Release is really responsible for the quasi-judicial process around revocations. And so that's where that one, and the field services director, the DOC provides some supervision in many of the counties that are covered by tribal lands. And so that those were in there, but certainly I think your point's a good one. Should we identify designee, and that could certainly be a simple fix.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next question is related to the same section as well. In noting all of the members of this committee, what I'm noticing that's missing is the minority leaders from the Senate and a minority leader from the House. And I'm wondering if the author would care to address why those two were not included in this working group.
Mr. Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll allow Commissioner Schnell to answer this, but I will just note, given that there are 11 federally recognized tribes, you know, this is a pretty large working group already. So my understanding is that, you know, that's a factor as well. And, you know, if you get a group that's too big, it becomes difficult to actually have a discussion. But I will also let Commissioner Schnell answer that further.
Commissioner Schnell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brawley, I think, you know, I think there are some things of a size. There's no intent here to exclude anyone. I think if it was, we could certainly do that. We want to make sure that there is broad representation. It's an important issue and has a variety of considerations. So certainly, it's something that there was no intent and probably, to be honest, probably more of an oversight on our part than anything else.
Chair Becker-Finn, any openness on adding, two individuals?
Thank you, Chair Mariani, for the question. I would be fine with doing that. I do think this is not intended to be a partisan issue at all. And so, I don't know what your openness is to oral amendments but I certainly don't have a problem with doing that. And I don't know if your House research would want to weigh in on the ability to fix that at this point or whether it makes sense to, I think we're sending this to the General Register, so it may be helpful to fix it at this point.
Yeah, Chair Becker-Finn, probably a lot easier to do it that way. I'm not sensing any kind of, controversy, particularly if the author is open and the commissioner has expressed his intent. Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate for me to offer this oral amendment?
We could. Certainly under our rules, the chair has that kind of discretion. I would, however, want to confer with our minority lead, Representative Johnson, on that matter as well. Representative Johnson?
I'm tempted to say yes, tempted to say no. It is somewhat of a technical, but it's more than just technical, and I want to make sure we get it right.
Yep.
We have a couple of committees more next week. It'll take 3 minutes to get it through.
Yeah, Representative Johnson, wisdom there. Representative Raleigh, I do think this is a simple enough floor amendment, assuming the bill moves forward today. So I would counsel to work with the author and see if we can address this issue, expeditiously on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll take your counsel and not offer an amendment at this time. The last question I've got is related to the costs of this. Who will bear the cost of this committee? We just recently heard House File 1162, and it was that fiscal note came in at about $25,000 to put together the working group for 1162. And, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering who would bear the cost, and will it be a similar cost for what we heard in 1162, Mr. Chair?
That's probably a commissioner question. I'm guessing, Commissioner Schnell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, because this has been really part and parcel to the work, and we have some discussions that are happening at the delivery system level as well, around effective delivery and funding of those services as well. And so this is something that would be a part built into that, and we would, the cost would be borne by the agency of bringing these people together. Frequently, many of the members, in particular, the folks who are doing the kind of the delivery work themselves, the CCA counties and the CPO counties, these folks are doing it. We meet with them on a regular basis anyway. So this is really just bringing them together and looking at all those issues. So the cost would be borne administratively by the agency.
It's good to have that on the record. I appreciate the question, Representative Raleigh, are you through?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am satisfied.
Very well. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Hi, Chair Mariani, Representative Becker Finn. I want to thank you for doing this as a task force instead of just pushing this through. There's a lot of complicated issues that need to be gone over by this task force, including sovereign nation rules and the state law, making sure that all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted before we put something like this together, to make sure that the proper oversight on these individuals so that reduce the recidivism rate and to make sure that they become more productive members in their own communities as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Chair Beckerfin, final comments and we'll move to a vote.
I just appreciate the support. This is a small step in the right direction. And I do, as I noted, I'm not always in favor of kind of slowing things down with a task force or working group, but I think this is an area that is very appropriate to do that in recognition of the unique sovereign status of the tribal nations that we're working with.
Very well. Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. The chair then renews his motion that House File 1641, we did not amend it. All right. House File 1641 be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Mariani?
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grosso, excused. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
Aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston, excused.
Oh, I am here.
Oh, okay. Thank
Poston,
you.
Poston, aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 18 ayes and 0 nays.
Very well. With 18 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and House File 1641 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Becker Finn. You brought us 2 very good bills and you brought us 2 bipartisan bills on top of it. So good way to start our Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The end of a very busy week for me, so thank you very much.
Indeed. Best wishes with these bills. Members, we have 2 bills left. Next, we're going to take up Representative O'Neill's bill, House File 1097. What I want to do, since we're being increasingly pressed by... our leadership to make sure we finish on time is I'm going to allot 15 minutes. I want to get to a vote on this. Actually, are we voting on it? No, we're laying it over by 11:45. And then we'll move on to the next bill. Representative O'Neill moves to refer House File 1097 to the Ways and Means Committee. And Representative O'Neill, we will be laying this over for possible inclusion as we did a couple of years ago with similar legislation. Representative O'Neill, you have an author's amendment. Do you wish to move that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A2.
Very well. House File 1097 being before us, the Representative O'Neill moves the A2 amendment. Representative O'Neill.
Voice vote is fine.
Very well. All in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 1097, amended with the A2 amendment, is before us. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is an expansion of the Alternatives to Incarceration program that we started back. It was actually in the 2017 legislation, and the very first pilot opened in Anoka County. So that's a CCA county, and they started that in January of 18. And then our report that we got in January of 19, just before everything went crazy in 2020 with COVID, they came back with a fantastic report. And the report basically stated that they were able to include in this Alternatives to Incarceration. So to be clear who we're talking about, these are folks that have had multiple technical violations, and they would have been sent back to prison. And so this was an intervention to try to see if we can help them with their addiction issues before basically revoking them and sending them back to prison. And so they were able to, they had 22 folks go through this Alternatives to Incarceration intense program. And the results are really astounding. So these are people that absolutely would have gone back to prison. And they had a 62% success rate. So, and I'm going to tell you quickly why that is. And then just for the sake of time, I do have Anoka County here to kind of tell us what's happened since January of 19 when they gave the last report. And then what they would like to do in the future. And my amendment that we just adopted would further expand this pilot project, one, into Wright County. So that's not a CCA county. That's actually... the felons are supervised by the DOC. So I have DOC field staff here that can tell you why we would like to expand there. And then I have in the amendment also, I'm super excited about this, to expand to Crow Wing County. And I have a testifier from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge who works in Crow Wing County at great length. And she'll tell you why we want to go to Crow Wing County. So these are specifically positioned counties that are ready to accept and to implement the Alternatives to Incarceration program. And I am sure that they will have a success of maybe greater than 62%. Very excited about this. And so the last thing I'm going to say before I turn it over first to Anoka County to tell us what's happened in their program since. And also, I guess the amendment, I should say, also includes back Anoka County. So, you know, with COVID, we had a hard time drafting. And so it's just, I took what I had from before. So really quickly, what they did is they had, before they did this Alternatives to Incarceration program, it would take months for their probation folks to get people into treatment, months. And so in those months, while they're waiting for treatment, they relapsed, they had additional technical violations, and it just escalated. With this program, I am proud to say that it only took an average of 17 days to go to outpatient, so not months, but 16 days, and an average of 22 days for inpatient treatment. And that is really substantial. That's why we had such a high success. So I'd like to duplicate that in Wright County, which again is a DOC. They supervise felons, and then up to Crow Wing County, where they, that's another CCA county, where they have a lot of services available to do both inpatient and outpatient treatment. And with that, Mr. Chair, for the sake of time, I'd love to have Anoka County tell us what it is that they've done through COVID and everything else, and then have the DOC representative, let's see, I believe Jake McClellan is on the line, and then finally, Gina Evans from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, talk about Crow Wing County. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Very good work, Representative O'Neill. I share your excitement over this. All right, so we have three individuals. I'm going to ask them to be very brief and to the point. And I believe, Representative O'Neill, we're going to start with the Anoka County testifier. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that would be lovely because that would kind of give the foundation as to where it started.
Super. And again, I missed the name of whoever that is. Come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your powerful but very concise and brief testimony.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. This is Dylan Workington. I'm the director of Anoka County Community Corrections, and I just want to say thank you to Representative O'Neill to this body, to the Department of Corrections, for a great partnership to make something in alternatives to incarceration a great success. I'm going to turn this over very quickly to my companion, Corey Cohan, to kind of fill in some of the detail since the last report we did to the legislature. But as Commissioner or as Representative O'Neill indicated, these are folks that were high needs and a high probability of returning to the institution, or in some cases being recommended by our organization to go to the institution. A high number of technical violations, and so it's this is why we do the work we do. We're super excited to have success. We want success in every area of our engagement. And so I'm going to turn it over to Corey Cohan, the manager of this program, to kind of give you some data regarding its success. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Nice testimony. That'd be wonderful, too. Please state your name for the record as well.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Corey Cohan from Anoka County Community Corrections. I'm the manager of Adult Field Services.
Very well. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you. I'll keep my remarks very brief. Representative O'Neill's explanation, she gave a good description of our program, but I wanted just to point out a couple of things that we've learned since our initial reports to give you an idea of the really impactful work that's going on in this project. As she indicated, we're focused right now on nonviolent controlled substance offenders who have a history of technical violations. Things like reporting for probation meetings, positive urine analysis tests, not completing treatment programs, et cetera. Folks who have historically ended up in a revocation cycle, either through the DOC, hearings and release back to prison, or a probation revocation through the courts. Alternatives to incarceration started in Anoka County in 2018, thanks to this funding and our partnership with the DOC. And I wanted to just point out that we've got some updated information in terms of our data and our outcomes. It's enabled Anoka County to dedicate a specialized probation agent and provide enhanced supervision to roughly 80 high needs offenders thus far. And as Representative O'Neill and Mr. Workington indicated, we've had really, really positive results. So far, 86% of our clients that have been involved in this project have avoided a prison commitment and remained in the community, 86%. Further, 67 of our offenders in this project have been referred to treatment. 70% of those folks have successfully completed treatment programming. And we think that number is really high and very, very promising as well. We're very encouraged by those outcomes, and we continue to evaluate the project long term. A couple things that I think make the program successful, I want just to quickly highlight for you. First and most importantly, the vital role of the corrections agent in this case. In our case, we have a very skilled agent at facilitating behavior change. She's also trained as a substance abuse assessor. She has a very small caseload of approximately 10 offenders, and she can provide very intensive case management and also have a lot of frequent contact with folks, sometimes up to weekly. She delivers cognitive interventions with her clients, addressing criminal thinking, and she also teaches life skills. We do a lot of stabilization in this program. We use our workhouse facility when necessary to provide some sobriety, force sobriety, and prepare people for treatment. Generally, it takes about 2 weeks from the time the person enters the program that they're assessed and actually in a program. So our time frame is even improved from, I think, the 17 days referenced by Representative O'Neill. So we're really, really proud of that as well. And then finally, we use a continuum of care approach, and we follow these clients throughout the treatment process and then post-treatment. Our agent maintains close contact with the clients, offering support for recovery and ensuring they're connected to a positive sober community. She describes herself as a sobriety coach who really celebrates their successes, holds them accountable when they slip, and then helps pick them up when they fall down. And so just that ongoing positive relationship really has been impactful at keeping people from committing further technical violations after completing treatment or relapsing. Most of our clients are on this program from about 90 days to 6 months in general. And so finally, I just wanted to echo what Mr. Workington indicated. We appreciate our relationship with the DOC on this project. We're grateful for the opportunity to do this. And I think we've shown that with proper intervention dosage, that this particular population is a very great target for this kind of intervention. They can be safely and successfully managed in the community with community alternatives to incarceration. We're hopeful to see resources for similar innovative correctional programs replicated across the state, and we encourage you to support House File 1097. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohan. Ongoing positive relationships. It sounds like powerful evidence-based approaches pursuing very humanistic methodology and pedagogy as well. 86%. Wow, congratulations. Thank you for your work. We have about 5 minutes left. Representative Williams, I think you still have two folks. If they each take 2 minutes, we should be okay. I think we have an individual from Wright County. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Oh,
there he is. Please state your name for the record. And you heard my two-minute challenge. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. My name is Jacob McClellan. I am the regional manager for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. Prior to my promotion, I was 9 years the supervisor for Wright County. I've been on the front end of the challenges in Wright County with our staff and with the clients that we serve within the county, specifically aligning programming for them. You know, our mission is transforming lives for a safer Minnesota. And with this bill, this gives us an opportunity to provide more tools and resources for Wright County to accomplish that mission. We've seen specifically gaps with programming in Wright County's inpatient programming specifically. Oftentimes we see these clients placed outside the county, which then takes them away from their loved ones, their support system. And finding a way to gap the alignment for costs, sometimes for the assessments, insurance the clients have to make, trying to find a way that how this bill can help bridge those gaps specifically for those clients. We often see these violations. Mr. Workington and Cohan have indicated that a lot of the violations we do see are repeat chemical use violations coupled with non-compliance and reporting. With additional resources like this, we can bridge the time that these clients can get into programming and reduce the likelihood that these clients can be deeper rooted in chemical use and get them into programming more effectively and efficiently. We do have a lot of things in place in Wright County. We have a treatment court program through court services and the courts. We also are aligned with Minnesota Recovery Connection. I believe this bill would be a great opportunity that we can strengthen our collaboration with Minnesota Recovery Connection, giving the peer support that these folks need, as well as the timeliness in getting these folks into programming. This is a resource that we need statewide, and I think this bill gives us an opportunity to expand beyond Anoka County and gets us a step closer towards that. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your work in Wright County. Obviously, in the legislature, we keep trying and working hard to get vital resources spread out throughout our entire state. So finally, we have Gina Evans with Minnesota Teen Challenge. Welcome to the committee. You heard the chair's two-minute challenge. Please state your name for the record. Give us your testimony.
Chair Mariani, Gina Evans, and I'm with Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. So I want to do two things, put a face to this and talk about Crow Wing County. And my testimony is 3.5 minutes. All right. Chair Mariani, Vice Chair Frazier, and members of the committee. My name is Gina Evans, and I am the Director of Advocacy at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. I want to thank Representative O'Neill for her continued heart to champion this bill for alternatives to incarceration. Many of you on this committee have gotten to know me over the years. I am bright, driven, and passionate. What you may not know is that I came from a home where drugs, alcohol, and violence were the only coping mechanisms anyone knew. My single mom, bless her heart, was in school full-time and worked full-time, and still we were on welfare, food stamps, government cheese, and Section 8 housing. My story is not unique. It is the story of many trapped in the revolving door of the criminal legal system, and disproportionately so for communities of color. Imagine if our stories were different. What could I be today? Maybe in your chair instead of this one. Please understand, I take full responsibility for my behavior, but by the time I was 30 years old, I had accumulated 4 drug crimes and several low-level nonviolent property crimes. All of these drug charges together added up to less than 4/10 of a gram of meth. My first charge ended me up in prison because I couldn't quit smoking weed at 21 years old. Three dirty UAs, and I was violated, and off to prison I went. There at 22 years old in Shakopee Women's Prison, I was sexually assaulted by a lifer and again traumatized. There I met a new drug and criminal connections and became a more sophisticated criminal. My second trip to Shakopee was for check forgery with the people that I connected with while in Shakopee the first time. This time I left with a written out recipe for lithium-based methamphetamines. Because of my short prison sentences, I was never eligible for substance use disorder or mental health programming during my sentences. So alternatives to incarceration might have been a better option for me and so many other short-term nonviolent persons. I share all this personal stuff with you to encourage you as lawmakers and people in power to find another way. There are people we are mad at and irritated by, those with mental health and substance use disorder, and then there are dangerous people that we are truly afraid of, and we need to stop treating people the same. This bill expands a program that is already working, you've heard that, into outstate Minnesota, where this committee has already heard 2 weeks ago from Dr. Tim Walsh, our VP at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and NAMI and others, that there is a dire need for more programs and services. Crow Wing County is a great partner for substance use disorder treatment and recovery. They run a robust specialty court by Judge Christine DeMay, and they offer treatment for those in custody in the jail that can continue in the community after sentencing. They have a long history of supporting recovery in the community. Lastly, the funding appropriated by this bill could be used to serve our veterans. Recently, the federal law that was passed to ensure funding is available for veterans to have access to substance use disorder treatment other than at the VA hospital. This has been okay for outpatient services, but we're still having issues accessing this funding for residential treatment for our veterans. Those men and women fight for our freedom and should have access to the best treatment available to them. And this funding fills some of those gaps. Thank you for taking the time to hear my story. And thank you again, Representative O'Neill, for your continued work to find alternatives to incarceration. I ask this body for a yes to House File 1097 and reach out to your partners in the Senate to make this and other common sense reforms happen this year.
Thank you, Ms. Evans. I apologize for rushing you through.
That's okay.
Very important and personal sharing as well. I want you to know, I'll say this in front of everyone, you are an inspiration to me. I've observed your work over the last several years, and your commitment to those pursuing reentry, second chance, advancing a redemptive culture in our society where folks can arrive at who they truly are and be wonderful co-citizens with everyone is inspirational. Thank you so much for your work. I see Representative Johnson's hand up. We have just a few seconds, and then I'm going to move to lay this over so we can get in the last bill. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative O'Neill, thank you for bringing this forward. This is a program that actually works, and it works well. And I want to thank Gina Evans for being here as well. The Teen Challenge program is a great program that actually works with the mid to high 80 success rate. And I like to give the success rate when they come to our committees instead of their savings on the dollar. Success is the most important thing. Chair Mariani, because this is such an important deal and it does work, we know it works. Instead of laying this over, I'm going to ask that you actually do change that from layover to send it to Ways and Means, because we need to get this going as quick as we can because it does work. And we need to help all those in our system to keep them from going through that revolving door. So I'm going to ask that you do change the motion to send this to Ways and Means instead of layover. Thank you.
Representative Johnson, I actually empathize with your request and would badly want to do that. We are appropriating funds here We haven't identified where and how we're going to do that. We did do this large appropriation, an appropriate one, in my opinion, large appropriation, compared to some of the other, appropriations that we've talked about earlier here. But we did this in our omnibus bill last year, and I think that's probably its best bet for being able to be successful. But I certainly appreciate the sentiment, and please know we're going to work awfully hard to get this properly resourced. All right. With that, the chair lays over House File 1097 as amended. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Representative Winkler, House File 1074. The chair moves to refer House File 1074 to the General Register. Representative Winkler, we just have a few minutes, about 10. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record. You know the deal. And let's hear about House File 1074.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for fitting this bill in. This bill has been heard multiple times before. It essentially ends the practice of having private prisons in Minnesota. We have no functional operating private prison in Minnesota today. The city of Appleton built one in the early 1990s. It operated for some time and has been out of commission for about 10 years. I think it is a model that is not well-suited to Minnesota. It creates worse outcomes, and it is a thing of the past, and this bill seeks to make sure that we no longer continue the practice of using private prisons in Minnesota.
Very well. And Representative Winkler, you've got a couple testifiers, I believe?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. I have listed a representative from ASPE, followed by a representative from MAPE. I don't have the name yet, but if the ASPE representative can come forward, state their name for the record, and give us your very concise and yet no doubt powerful testimony, the chair would greatly appreciate it. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Hello. My name is William Farr. Thank you for having me, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I work for the Minnesota Department of Corrections as a correction officer, too, at the facility in Lino Lakes, Minnesota, and I'm a proud member of AXME 2728. I've been with the state for over 6 years now. Before coming to the Department of Corrections, I worked in Appleton at the private prison. At that time, it was operated by Corrections Corporation of America, now known as CoreCivic. I'm here in support of Representative Winkler's bill to ban private prisons in our state. It's the right thing to do. Having worked in both the private prison industry and the public sector, I can tell you from experience, the public sector is unequivocally where our corrections and rehabilitation belong. We cannot risk the inadequacies which the private prison industry will undoubtedly bring to our state. The private prison industry has a perverse incentive to see offenders return to incarceration. They spend time and money lobbying for penal codes aimed at incarcerating more people. Their business model and the profits they deliver to private shareholders depend on repeat offenders, lower wages, less programming, and lower standards of excellence. Meanwhile, they cherry-pick the best, healthiest offenders to cut additional costs and then turn around and mislead legislators by saying they can provide the services for less. It's a sham, and it should be kept out of our state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Farr. Thank you for your service at Lino Lakes and for your commitment to our corrections, emphasis of our correction system. Thank you, sir. Next, we have a representative from MAPE. If you can come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your concise testimony, the chair would appreciate it. Welcome to the committee.
Hello. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Keith Halseth. I'm a correction security case manager at Lino Lakes Correctional Facility and a MAPE member. I've worked in corrections and law enforcement for over 20 years, both in corrections, three different facilities, Stillwater, Rush City, and Lino Lakes, like I said, and at two major police departments. Right now, my current job, I help individuals who have been convicted by the courts navigate the facility and get the resources they need here as well as upon release. I help them with their ongoing court involvements and upon community and update the community agents upon the person's release for public safety reasons. Our members take seriously their responsibility in providing programming that reduces recidivism and promotes successful reintegration back into the community. While private prisons corporations seek to exploit states with budget concerns, they have a track record of keeping offenders incarcerated for longer periods to boost profits and issue more infractions that jeopardize staff safety, which many of our folks are already concerned about. The Prairie Correctional Facility, despite cherry-picking its offenders, like was previously said, had higher recidivism rate than the DOC facilities, 13% higher for rearrest and over 20% higher for reconviction. These higher recidivism rates will only increase the cost of incarceration to the state of Minnesota and exacerbate the warehousing issues that the OLA report highlights as a significant safety issue to staff and the individuals incarcerated. Prairie and Correctional Facility only accepted younger offenders without any serious medical conditions and offered fewer programs than their DOC facilities. According to a study titled Comparing Public and Private Prison Services and Programs in Minnesota, findings from prison interviews published in the Criminal Justice Journal, the Prairie Correctional Facility contracted to provide for full-time, 6 hours per day, 5 day per week chemical dependency treatment program to be made available to at least 10% of the people incarcerated there. The program was also to include separate housing for the participants and that the programming would be cognitive and holistic, similar to what is provided in the public system. The ratio of therapeutic staff to participants was supposed to be 1 in 12. When after the contract was executed, the program failed to materialize. Keeping Minnesota correctional system public will help ensure that the integrity and high quality of programming continues to be provided to incarcerated individuals. These services provided by the DOC has proven to reduce recidivism and keep our staff and communities safer. Minnesota needs to focus on improving and investing in the facilities we currently have. This is some of the testimony I've already heard today, so we think we just need to continue that. Please support HF1674. I appreciate your time, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you guys might have.
Well, I appreciate you, sir. I appreciate your service, not only at the three facilities that you've been at, but also serving in our local police departments as well, and your commitment to quality and safety and ensuring that we keep investing in good practices in our correctional system is greatly appreciated. We have two members. We have 2 minutes. And so we'll start Representative Johnson, we'll finish Representative Long, and then we're going to move to vote members. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, Representative Winkle, I understand what you're doing here. And I'm going to be right up front. I want no privately run prisons in the state of Minnesota, period. They're not good. They're not run properly. But I have an issue where the state or our county cannot rent the facility and run it themselves. When we had before COVID hit, we were in our jails or our prison system were getting over full. We could have actually rented that facility and made and run it ourselves with our state employees, run completely by the state on a lease to own option. And made all our prisons safer because we could have reduced the capacity, the overcrowdedness in all of them, and make it safer for all our guards and our corrections officer and all the staff at them. But with this bill, it would not allow that. It'd be a straight buy if we wanted to buy Appleton. Or a lease to own would actually help the community of Appleton so they can build up until and not have that property tax base removed out of their community. So you have to look at all the options. We also have the issue where sounds like reading some of the DOC is only giving a expected life of county jails, which are cost millions of dollars, a 25-year lifespan. Then DOC could come in and close a county jail down. Where in my county years ago, we had what was called the Harder Hilton. We had a hotel that had a unit, I believe it was six units offset from the from the rest of the building that the county actually rented for our low-risk work-released inmates that were at the county facility. And we had rules they had to go by. If they violated the rules, if we caught them, then they would have to go back to the county jail. But that saved our taxpayers a lot of money by renting that facility. It wasn't county, government owned. It was a private hotel that we housed prisoners in and made that. So it's, you have to look at all the consequences. I understand the precept of the bill, but I wish it instead of said owned or leased. I wish you just had the bill say we will not allow privately run prisons or jails. And you would have 100% support, I believe, from our side of the aisle. But the current situation is going to make it very difficult because it could put some real hardship on counties. So thank you.
Appreciate your thoughts and advice, Representative Johnson. Representative Long, a few seconds.
I know we're over time, so I'll be extremely brief. I just want to thank Majority Leader Winkler for bringing this bill forward and mentioned that we should not have created private prisons in our system to begin with. Having a profit incentive for incarceration is really the wrong approach, and I think we're moving away from that nationally with President Biden's action, and we're moving away from that at the state level, and I'm very grateful for Majority Winkler bringing this forward.
And I do think that across the aisle, while we may have different approaches, we're probably closer than we think we are in terms of that value that you articulated, Representative Long. Representative Winkler, final seconds for comments, and we're going to move to a vote.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson. We can continue to have further conversation. We want to get this done and end this practice going forward in Minnesota. I appreciate your comments.
Very well. With that, the chair renews his motion to refer House File 1074 to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel, excused. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative
Lucero.
No.
Representative Lucero, nay. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative Mueller, nay. Representative Novotny.
Novotny's aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston.
Poston, aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 15 ayes and 3 nays.
Thank you. With 15 ayes, 3 nays, the motion prevails and House File 1074 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Winkler. Thank you, members. Thank you for a good, strong engagement and conversation today. I trust you will all have a good, restful weekend, and we'll see you all next week when we reconvene on Tuesday. Until then, this committee stands adjourned.